Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to the Couple Speak Relationship Forum on Blog Talk Radio. I'm your host, Susan Lager, a psychotherapist and relationship coach at the Couple Center and Couple Speak in Portsmouth, New Hampshire, where I broadcast live on alternate Wednesdays at 8:30 p.m. Tonight's half-hour show, Do You or Does Anyone You Love Have a Drinking Problem?, is about the issue of problematic drinking when there may be denial about it, which is often the case. I'll be talking about some of the dynamics I see regarding this in my private practice and in my private life, and I'll be sharing some self-tests which can help drinkers or their loved ones look more objectively at the issue. One important point I would like to share with listeners. I am not a substance abuse specialist, so I would recommend that if listeners want to get help around this issue, they first take the tests, then contact a licensed alcohol and drug counselor. We call them LADICs in their area, and or go to their nearest AA meeting. Okay, that would be important for you to know. And for anyone calling in live, either call toll-free at 877-497-9046, or if you can't get through because it's busy, call on the regular number 760-542-4114. And please feel free to ask a question or make a comment on the air. And in order to do that, just dial 1 on your phone and you'll be able to join the conversation, which I always prefer. Please join me with any questions or comments. I always welcome a conversation here. So, I guess the question is, why did I decide to do this show now? At the time of this broadcast, it is July 2nd, so we're 2 days away from July 4th weekend, when historically it's been a time of year when there's lots of drinking and driving, parties, all kinds of celebrations. And it's a socially permissible time to basically overdrink. And I know when I was thinking about going to a friend's party in Newburyport, the first thing that came to mind for me is, oh, my God, do I want to drive home with all the drunks on the road? And I went through a whole thing in my mind about the way I could get home with minimal risk. And so it gave me the idea to deal with this issue during this radio podcast, because it is something that comes up with, I think, more frequency, not only during the holidays, but during the summer when there's so much partying and so much socialization, and again, social permission to drink. So I thought I would address this issue. The other thing that I thought it would be important to mention is that I have observed a lot of dynamics around problematic drinking, not only in my private practice, but in my personal life, friends and friends of friends. And there are a few common things that I've observed and I would say I'm kind of a civilian because I'm not an expert in this area, but I am a therapist. I understand the issues, and there are a few things that occur with some frequency. One is that I see the drinker usually in partnerships, generally in denial about the extent of their drinking and how problematic it may be, and often projecting concerns about their drinking onto their partner. So the drinker often feels like their partner is just hypervigilant, they're just anxious, they're very controlling. There's all kinds of projections about how this problem does not belong to me. I'm okay. I'm fine. So I would say that the drinker is often in this stage of change that I call They're not even pre-contemplation. In pre-contemplation, there's some sense that maybe there's a problem. You're not yet weighing advantages and disadvantages or doing a cost-benefit analysis about making a change. But there's like a seminal kind of awareness of a problem. So they're barely in pre-contemplation. And that's a problem because in order for a problematic drinker to be motivated to do something about it, they need to get into the contemplative state of change where they are for themselves really looking at the issues. Another thing I see with some frequency is a hypervigilant partner who often, you know, the partner who's carrying the concerns, the worry about the drinking, they generally become the parent in the relationship. So I will see that partner as always being the one who's the designated driver, the one who's anticipating a wedding or a bar mitzvah or a party, and how's my spouse going to do? What am I going to do to get us home? What happens if they're completely out of control? How can I prevent this? Is there something I can do? So they're kind of carrying the worry and the concern about it. And it's, I can tell you, it's really no fun for the partner in the parental position who's observed this, who's been on the receiving end of all the consequences of it, and the one for whom it feels very real as a problem. I generally also see empty promises made by the drinker. Let's say it's someone who has maybe a very beginning sense that, well, yeah, I drank too much last time, or it was a problem at that party. I could see how you'd be weirded out by that. They will often make promises about modulating or about not drinking, and the promises, in my observation, are not backed up by action plans, or the promises are just very unrealistic. I won't drink, or I'll stop at a certain time, or I'll notice it, and there's no real action plan that would hold them accountable to either modulated drinking or sobriety. And there are a lot of games. This is something I see with a lot of frequency in my work with couples where the drinking partner, they think they're fooling everybody, so they may be going to the basement or the shed to do their drinking. And the other partner knows full well that that's the scene of the crime, so to speak. That's where the drinking happens. And it's like a what we call a folie à deux. It's like this little madness between two people. It's like a little pretense that we won't talk about what's actually happening, but we both kind of know that you're going into the shed or you're going into the basement, and I know that you're going to get sloshed, and you know that you're going to get sloshed, but we don't name the elephants in the living room. So it's this whole dance that often the drinker and the sober partner or the non-problematic drinking partner engage in with each other. Another key thing that I observe is that there are no real consequences that are perceptible to the drinker, the problematic drinker. So, for instance, the other partner may say, I'm not going to tolerate this anymore, or you need to stop, or you need to cut back. There are a lot of shoulds and need tos and have tos, but often the sober partner or the other partner they haven't reached a kind of bottom line about it. So there's no a clear consequence, something that would sound like if we go to that wedding and I observe that you're out of control around drinking, I am going to leave without you. I will not stay. I will not be witness to this one more time. I will not subject myself to it. So you will be on your own about how to go home, and you will not have a car available to you because I will not allow you to get into a car and drink. That is often almost a new language for the sober partner or the non-problematic drinking partner, reaching a kind of bottom line where something significant happens to the drinker that would motivate them to make a change. And the other thing that I see with some frequency is a family which often avoids the issue or accommodates by not drinking at events. I've seen this a lot where everyone in the family knows that somebody has a drinking problem. So nobody has a glass of champagne at Christmas. Nobody has any liquor. Everybody bends to the drinker's problem rather than giving the message that, look, we don't have the drinking problem. We want to support you, but the whole world is not going to bend to your problem. You're going to need to learn how to deal with the fact that there are other people in the world who know how to drink in a non-problematic way. So there's a kind of accommodation that really lessens the motivation for the drinker to learn how to deal in the real world. And any or all of these, in my experience, is a problem because anything that keeps the problem drinker in some state of avoidance or denial of the problem is not helpful. And what I would say the goal is around if you have a drinking problem or you have a partner who has a drinking problem, the goal would be to create strategies to help the drinker become more aware of the problem with more motivation to either modulate or get sober. There really need to be consequences, and the consequences are what generally move the drinker into the state of contemplation where there's a kind of cost-benefit analysis about what would happen if I stopped, what would happen if I continued, what are the advantages or disadvantages of each. And I think that that's a really critical thing. What I do, by the way, in my private practice when couples are in a real spin about this and they're in a kind of argument about whether there is a problem or not, is I ask the problematic drinker to keep a journal and to become their own booze cop, so to speak. That's what I call it. Because the other partner has historically become they become the one who polices the drinking. So I say to the drinker, I think you're going to need to become your own booze cop. So you seem to be very insistent that you don't have a problem or it's minimal or very occasional. I would encourage you to journal it, to keep drinking the way you've been drinking and to note it down to every little fine detail so that you then, in a more informed, objective way, can make an assessment. And that can often begin to shift things because they're holding the awareness about it rather than projecting it out onto the other partner. Now, in this program, what I want to do and what I thought would be useful would be, given this time of year and the fact that we're moving into the summer, I thought it would be helpful to share with you listeners two tools that I think are very useful and that can help in, they're kind of objective tests about the level, you know, the nature of the drinking and how problematic it is. So it gets it out of the realm of the subjective because that's part of the status quo that the drinker in denial often says, well, I can stop or I only do it once every 2 weeks. It's, you know, their own subjective analysis of the problem. And I encourage people to use these two tools, which gets it into the realm of objectivity, the objective assessments about drinking and blood alcohol level. One of the tools is called the Michigan Alcohol Screening Test, the MAST, and it's the revised edition, and you can find it at counselingresource.com. That's counselingresource.com, okay? And it's a 22-question self-test evaluating risk levels for problem drinking and alcoholism. And what it does is it debunks the common myth that drinkers have about no problem because, quote, they can stop or because they only drink a certain number of drinks. It assesses the social impacts of drinking, the impact on one's home, family, and work responsibilities, medical indicators, medical signposts of drinking that's become problematic, any possible hospitalizations, possible arrests, and the timing of drinking. And what it does is it takes the subjectivity out of the equation, which I think is really important. And I'll share with you some of the questions from that test. I don't know that I'm going to have time to go through the whole thing. I did the test on myself, and as I expected, I came out at zero, which is you don't have a drinking problem. It really looks at drinking and really assesses risk levels for problem drinking and risk levels for alcoholism based on all these factors, with different numbers representing different levels of risk. The other test that I would recommend to take the guesswork out of things and the subjectivity out of things is to the use of the blood alcohol calculator, and you can find that at bloodalcoholcalculator.org. It's a terrific tool which evaluates the number and the type of drinks consumed by a person of a certain weight and gender over a specific period of time. And what it does is it gives you a readout of what your blood alcohol level is or would be if you were stopped by a cop, and whether you'd be at risk for a DWI. So you key in your weight, your gender, the type of drink, whether it's wine or beer or mixed drinks, martinis, et cetera, over how many hours, and it gives you an actual number. And the current blood alcohol, the legal limit in Maine is 0.08, if I'm correct. So anything over that, you are driving illegally. And it takes the guesswork out of it. So a drinker could look at, well, if I'm, let's say they make a resolution, well, I'll only have four drinks at this wedding. If you look at the number of hours in the wedding, your weight, and the kind of drinks that you plan to have, you will have a sense as to whether or not at the end of that wedding you are legally impaired, especially if you plan to drive the car. So I think that's really a critical objective analysis. So before I go into some of the questions on the Michigan alcohol screening test, what I'd like to do is just do a little mini commercial break here and let you know that if you are interested in therapeutic services, feel free to contact me for couples work related either to this issue around problematic drinking, or you can contact me around couples work related to any one of a number of issues that you may be having in your primary relationship. I'm now doing discernment counseling, which is for couples on the brink of divorce, moving couples toward a decision about staying together, reconciling, or getting a divorce. And you can also, if you stay tuned, you will be in touch with my next couples retreat with Meredith Richardson, which we are very excitedly planning on doing in the fall. We just had a fabulous retreat on Star Island last week, and I don't want to brag, but it was really terrific for all involved. So if you wanted to contact me for any of these services, you can contact me at 603-431-7131. That's the number of my office. Okay, now I'd like to share with you the Michigan alcohol screening test. Okay, so hopefully I'll have time to do the questions. It's 22 questions. Question number one, do you feel you are a normal drinker, that you drink as much or less than other people? Yes or no? Have you ever awakened the morning after some drinking the night before and found that you couldn't remember a part of the evening, so that addresses blackouts? Yes or no? Does any near relative or close friend ever worry or complain about your drinking? So this assesses the social kind of implications. Do you ever feel guilty about your drinking? So is there some beginning kind of seminal awareness of your drinking as a problem? Have you ever attended a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous? In order to do that, you probably were thinking you had a drinking problem. Have you ever gotten into physical fights when drinking? Has drinking ever created problems between you and a near relative or a close friend? Has any member or close friend gone to anyone for help about your drinking? So again, a kind of social indicator. Have you? And most people, by the way, are not going for help about somebody else's drinking unless their drinking is clearly problematic. Have you ever lost friends because of your drinking? Have you ever gotten into trouble at work because of drinking? Again, what's the impact on your responsibilities, either at work or at home? Have you ever lost a job because of drinking? Have you ever neglected your obligations, your family, or your work for two or more days in a row because you were drinking? Do you drink before noon fairly often? Often, by the way, people are in denial because they say, well, I don't start drinking until 4 or 5 o'clock. I knew a couple that ran a marina that would start drinking at 4 until they were completely sloshed. And their rationale was, we don't start till before, but they never thought about what happens after 4 and how they were totally impaired, usually starting by 5:30. Have you ever been told you have liver trouble such as cirrhosis? Again, medical implications of your drinking. After heavy drinking, have you ever had delirium tremens, DTs, severe shaking, visual or auditory hallucinations? Again, assessing the medical implications of your drinking. Most people who are not problematic drinkers do not have that. Have you ever gone to anyone for help about your drinking? So again, did it occur to you as a possible problem? Have you ever been hospitalized because of drinking? Has your drinking ever resulted in your being hospitalized in a psychiatric ward? Wait a minute, my whatchamacallit went off. There we go. Sorry about that, folks. I have a phone that goes off of speakerphone, so hopefully you can hear me now. So have you ever been hospitalized in a psychiatric ward because of your drinking? Have you ever gone to any doctor, social worker, clergyman, or mental health clinic for help with any emotional problem in which drinking was part of the problem? Have you ever been arrested for more than once for driving under the influence of alcohol? Have you ever been arrested even for a few hours because of other behavior while drinking? And then what happens is you score yourself, and you get in different ranges in terms of your risk for alcoholism. So it's not all the same. So the higher the score, the more at risk you are for alcoholism. So that's the Michigan alcohol screening test, and I would encourage you if you've been if it's even occurred to you that maybe you have a problem, or if any of these, if you answered yes to a number of these questions, then just by listening to this program, you might want to take this test, okay? Again, you can get it at acounselingresource.com. Now, I don't see any questions coming up on my board, so... believe it or not, we're going to have to wrap up. This was just a short little show. And, I think given the fact that we're going into right now a very active time of social drinking, where for people who don't have a problem, it's not a problem. But for people who do have a problem, it tends to ramp up and get worse. It doesn't just go away. I would encourage you to administer these self-tests. And, again, to create your own journal so you become your own booze cop instead of setting up your partner to police you. I want to thank all you listeners, and again, my hopes for a safe July 4th and a summer with drinking that's fun and under control, not drinking that's problematic. And if you want to contact me for any work related to this or any other issues, you can contact me at the Couple Center in Portsmouth, New Hampshire. My number, again, is 603-431-7131. And I would encourage you to go to my website, susanlager.com, where I have a blog and all kinds of other things. I have a lot of stuff on my resource page of that website, and I'll keep you posted about upcoming retreats. And Meredith and I are planning one for somewhere wonderful in the fall. It's going to be somewhere on the coast of Maine or New Hampshire. Okay, so stay tuned for that. My next episode will be Wednesday, July 23rd at 8:30 p.m. with Meredith Richardson, my colleague, friend, mediator, conflict coach, and collaborative lawyer. And we haven't yet decided what we're going to talk about, but I will announce it. So take care and have a good time and stay safe. Bye-bye.